Sorry. Hey, what's up? Welcome to another edition of the Superflight NBA Show, your Jean-Michel Basquiat of NBA shows, because it's great to know that in this day and age, anyone is capable of doing anything and everything, whether you're professionally schooled or trained at it or not. And if you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, you should go look up Basquiat. He's an amazing artist. Was an amazing artist. Just stay off of drugs, kids. That's all I'm saying. How's it going, everybody? It is Monday, April 24th, and my name is Joe Borelli, your host, coming at you again from my studio in Brooklyn, New York. It's a lovely day outside. How's it going, folks? I just want to, let's give you a quick synopsis about the show. Since this is the first time we're going to air on Dash Radio, I am a guy who likes to talk, likes to hear the sound of my own voice, and likes to give you some political and social commentary before my NBA show, usually. And not just that, like I like to tell stories about whatever. Whatever happens to me during the week or things I think of that have, you know, happened in my past, I like to share with you. If you want to share a story with me, feel free, man. And woman, and boy and girl, you can totally reach out and share these things with me. And I, you know, maybe if I like them, I'll read them on the air or on the whatever this is, and we can talk. But yeah, I do a daily, not daily, I do a weekly NBA podcast, and I like to think that I have some of the best, most knowledgeable NBA guests on my show every week. And, you know, we usually get into a lot of fun. I'm a guy who tries to keep it light and loose. I don't like to get super crazy with the stats because honestly, numbers hurt my brain. And I have to think way too much at work in my normal job. So this is just a labor of love for me, and I like to bring a little bit of entertainment to the show. And so I like to talk, you know, about the NBA. And I don't know. So anyway, coming at you, I can tell you ways to get in touch with the show. I can tell you that you can also listen to this show on podcast form, which is, I think, where most of my listeners come from. But we're also on Dash Radio now. So this is the NBA show, not the NBA podcast, as I used to call it. So, ways to get in touch. You can reach me. You can follow the show on Twitter at SuperflightPod. You can follow me personally at Joe Borelli. You can email the show at thesuperflightpodcast@gmail.com. You can listen on Dash Satellite Radio, which you're probably doing right now if you're listening to it at all. Or if you're listening to it later on podcast or earlier, depending on when which one drops first. You can follow on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, any number of podcast places where you can find a podcast. You can listen to this show as well. So anyway, let's get into it. Let's go. So we're going to talk about the Bulls this week and a little bit of other playoffs things. But I was fascinated by the Bulls playoff run and thus far. Now they're tied 2-2. But I had Tyler Place from SB Nation Bloggable come on last night, and we talked about it. So it was a lot of fun. It was a great conversation. Tyler's a very knowledgeable guy. He knows a lot about the Bulls and about basketball in general. So if you guys want to hear about that, just hang tight. We'll get to it soon. In the meantime, let me tell you about what's going on in my life, because I know you're super eager to hear about my life. Because otherwise, why would you be listening to this show, right? So I think if you've been listening to me for a while, you know that I like to run. It's something that I do not only to keep my cardiovascular health in shape and keep my weight down, although it's not something I've ever really had to worry about. I've always been the skinniest kid around, which, you know, when I was in school, people used to make fun of me for. All the kids used to tease me and pick on me and stuff. And now they're all old and fat and I still look damn good. Thank you. Anyways, it's not without it's not without work, but really I run because it's meditative for me, and it's, I get to think, I get to listen to podcasts, I listen to great music while I'm running, and I'll tell you guys about it sometimes when I find a new album. This week, I just was like, I gotta go for a run. Last year, I signed up and went and did a half marathon, my first half marathon ever. And I'm still considering doing the Brooklyn half. Well, that's actually at the end of May, so I'm not doing that one. But there's a Brooklyn rock and roll half, which is the one I did last year, and it happens in October. And I'm thinking about signing up for that one again. And I probably will, but I really need to get back into shape. The winter months kill you in New York. It's really hard to run. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go get a good run. I'm just going to do like 3 miles. It'll be fine. And, you know, get myself back into some sort of shape. So I start out on my run and I'm feeling good. I'm running along and it's a really nice day outside. I have just a pair of shorts and a shirt on because it's so nice. It's like, you know, mid 60s, beautiful day for a run, beautiful weather for running. And I'm running along and I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling good. I feel like I'm making, you know, taking good strides and like feeling great about myself. And I run past this really attractive young lady who kind of gives me a look and I'm like, all right, yeah, man. Like I just got a look. I must be feeling, I'm looking good, man. Like I'm getting looks from the ladies. I'm sure my wife wouldn't be happy to hear about this, but actually she probably wouldn't care. But I'm running and I get like a few feet past her and I was just like, oh, I have a runny nose. I'll just, you know, like put my finger to my nose, just like, you know, sort of wipe away the whatever. And I realize that I have blood all over my face. I have a bloody nose. So there's, it was really embarrassing. I don't know if you guys have ever had like bloody nose problems. I've had them since I'm a little kid, but lately because of the winter and because of the dry heat and everything, oh my God, I've been getting bloody noses like every freaking day. To the point where I'm actually a little bit concerned. And as I'm telling you this, I just got back from a doctor's appointment. Because not only am I a weird guy who likes to hear himself talk, I'm also a bit of a hypochondriac. And I'm thinking, you know, if my nose is bleeding like this all the time, why am I telling you guys about bloody noses? Sorry if this is gross for you. But I'm thinking if like I'm having this problem all the time, maybe there's something wrong, like legitimately wrong. Like maybe, right away, my mind goes to cancer. And cancer is no joke. And I think we've all been touched by this personally. I know I have. And because of that, every time I think something might be wrong with me, my mind instantly goes like, oh, okay, well, this is the end for me. I need to start making, you know, I need to start thinking about putting my affairs in order and I need to start making peace with everything. And it's okay. I'm 42. It's fine. Like I've had a really good life. I'm going to go see the doctor and I'm not joking. I'm not making light of cancer. It's a horrible, horrible, tragic thing. It's touched way too many people, especially people in my life and me personally. Because of this is where my mind goes. And I get really nervous and I get stressed out and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to die. So I go to the doctor. I'm like, doc, my doc is a woman, by the way. I don't know why I wouldn't call her doc. I probably would call her doc. But anyway, I didn't call her doc. I don't really call her anything. I'm just like, hey, how are you doing? And I go in there and I'm like, listen, my nose is bleeding all the time. I just had a bloody nose yesterday. And I, you know, I was running and it was really embarrassing. And I was freaking out a little bit because I'm like running down the street trying to wipe blood off my face while I'm running. And I still, to my credit, thank you, I kept running. I finished my 3 miles. It stopped after a while. But I went in and I'm like, you know, what's wrong with me? I'm like, do I have cancer? Is there something going on? Am I dying? And she's like, no, I'm sorry. You just have dry nostrils. Here, try some Vaseline. Maybe you go see your nose and throat specialist. You're fine. Use a humidifier. I'm like, well, that's a huge relief. Also, I feel like a big jackass. So there you go. Don't be a Joe Borelli, everyone. Don't be a hypochondriac. But also, your health is something you should really think about and take seriously. Because in a society, in a culture that we live in where we don't have national health care and being tough and not going to the doctor is sort of a rite of passage in certain circles. You should really think about your own health and take better care of yourself. I know I should. Anyway, this conversation with you and I didn't really go anywhere, but I thought you'd like to know about my little adventure yesterday. In any case, so Tyler Pleiss is coming right up and we're going to talk about some Bulls and some playoffs and we'll be back right after this.
Phoenix fans, say it with me. We are PHX. We are PHX. I want you to check out a brand new Phoenix Suns podcast called The Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast. Tim Tompkins, Greg Esposito, Dave King for a weekly Phoenix Suns podcast. You can find The Solar Panel, Phoenix Suns podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, and sunspodcast.com. We are PHX. We are PHX.
Today's sponsor of the Superflight Podcast is GlassesUSA.com, where you can get quality prescription glasses at up to 70% off retail price. That's right, GlassesUSA.com is the bomb. I'm repping hard for them because I believe that everyone that needs glasses should be able to afford a pair of awesome, stylish glasses. Just go to GlassesUSA.com now, and you can choose from a huge selection of frames in more than 2,500 different styles. They have in-house brands and they have designer brands like Adidas and Armani. Seriously, go check it out. They have this awesome online tool, the virtual mirror feature, where you can upload a picture of your face from Facebook or your computer. You align the glasses on your picture just the way they would align on your face, and you'll see exactly what they look like before you ever purchase. There's virtually no risk. So go to glassesusa.com now and enter the promo code ALMIGHTY to get 55% off of any pair of glasses at checkout. That's promo code ALMIGHTY, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y, to get 55% off of your glasses at checkout. So go over to glassesusa.com now, get yourself some stylish new frames, see like a regular person sees who doesn't need glasses, and enter the promo code ALMIGHTY so they know who sent you. Okay, now back to our show. Welcome back to the Super Flight. This is your second time on, I believe, right?
Yes.
And why don't you tell everybody how they can get in touch with you and where they can follow you?
Yes, I am on Twitter at Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, underscore Pleiss, P-L-E-I-S-S. And you can find my writing at Bloggable from SB Nation. And the website is blogable.com.
Nice. That's pretty easy.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Yeah. So we should, oh man, there's so many things to talk about with this series now. When I asked you if you wanted to come on last week, the Bulls were up 2-0, and it was like, it was a shock. It seemed like they were going to walk away with this series unbelievably so. And Rajon Rondo is playing out of his mind. Like, playoff Rajon Rondo is a legit thing. Well, I'm jumping ahead, but... Fast forward to tonight and the last time they played, it's been a train wreck. I'm not even sure where to start. Let's see. They lost tonight. Maybe we should talk about, let's talk about Rondo's injury first. So Rondo was, you know, I'm not a big fan, honestly, and I've been pretty vocal about Rondo. When he was with Boston, he was great. I really liked watching him play, but in the meantime, like, he's gone to a few places and, he's just proven himself to be just a real jackass. So I kind of hold that against him, you know? He said some really, like, not good things, some anti-gay slurs, and, you know, like, it's fine. It's not fine. But if you have contrary beliefs about popularly held opinions that most people feel are the right way to think and you disagree, just keep it to yourself. Just shut up. You know, you don't have to let everybody know that you're an asshole.
Right.
So I take points away from him for that. But we should talk about that, you know, in the playoffs, Rondo is like a whole different person. And here's my question to you, before I keep rambling. Is it just a matter of him not being motivated? And we don't want to spend too much time on this because he's obviously not playing. And there's a game that we just watched that we should get to. But is it just a matter of him not being motivated? Like, he's always had this in him. He just didn't feel like it.
I would say so. I mean, it just seems like he's far more engaged than he was at any one point during the regular season. You know, the Bulls started off the regular season pretty well. And the three alphas were playing well, and then they hit some slumps, and then you had the incident with Rondo throwing the towel at assistant coach Jim Boylan. And then that led to him, you know, his downfall during the regular season and eventually being benched for, you know, Jerian Grant and Michael Carter Williams. And, then you had the Instagram post, and it just seemed like he was on his way out of that league, and that he'd end up in China probably next year. But, you know, through it all, I will say, you know, given his recent history with Dallas and Sacramento, he has stayed professional for the most part, from everything that I've read in terms of dealing with the media, but dealing with, you know, the younger players and staying engaged and, you know, just always being prepared. And that's one thing that I think that's helped him be ready, you know, at the end of the regular season that we saw when the Bulls are, you know, I wrote about this the other day, they're 5 games under 500, and Fred made the decision to start Rondo again, and it made a major difference. You know, the ball started moving again. He was engaged, and, you know, he led the Bulls, you know, back into the playoff picture in a 41-41 record with Jimmy Butler also leading the way. And then we see in the first two games, you know, he's still engaged. It's a totally different person that we saw during the regular season. And, you know, it just kind of makes you wonder, you know, if he was playing like that the entire season, how different things would have been. If he was that engaged on both ends of the ball, just how different things might have been. And it's just a little kind of frustrating, obviously, and a little disappointing that it's come to this, that the Bulls the Bulls' playoff hopes have pretty much rested on the shoulders of Rajon Rondo. If you would ask me that, a month or two ago, I probably would have just laughed hysterically at you. But this is where we're at now.
As would most people. Yeah, and it's a really bad stroke of luck that he injured his thumb, because like he came out of nowhere. He was the unlikely hero. He was the savior of the team going into the playoffs. And then all of a sudden, what even happened? He broke his thumb. Did it happen during the game? I haven't heard anything about this. I just know that his thumb is broken. It's like fractured, and he'll be out until at least game seven, right?
Right. They said it was during game two in the third quarter. He was swiping at a ball and he caught his thumb. And they said, of course, with the adrenaline, he played through it. And they said Rondo woke up the next day and his thumb was blue, and said he probably figured he should probably get some x-rays. And then that's when it revealed the fracture. And
The one thing you can say about Rondo that you can't really take away from him is the guy is tough as nails, man. He played with a dislocated elbow, which was a gruesome injury to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. And look, he tore his ACL, I think, and he played through that. Like, he's a tough dude. It's not surprising that he injured himself. Nobody really knew. But
right.
I think he's numb below the head. But anyway, he might even be numb in the head. But whatever. it's a shame. It's a really interesting turn of events. And like, at one point, all right, listen, going into this series, I was like, can we just get this over with? The Bulls have been a train wreck all season. As I was just tweeting to you, like we were texting back and forth, like when without Rajon Rondo out there, their offense is stagnant. It doesn't do anything. Nobody moves. Jimmy Butler during this game was in trouble a few times, and like no one's moving. No one's rotating to help him out. Nobody's getting open so he can pass the ball out of it. Like he's defended by two guys, and people just stand there and watch. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, obviously a lot of that has to do with coaching. But without Rondo there, it just like, I don't know if just that he's that big of a general on the floor. He's that good at like getting guys in their spots on the floor, which is, not a small thing. But go ahead. Give me your thoughts about it. Sorry.
Well, it's just kind of funny because, there was a time in the regular season around when, he got benched and he wasn't playing as much when he was in the game, and he was just holding the ball way too long. He wasn't, he wasn't moving it side to side, and that was creating a lot of the stagnation in the regular season, which led to his benching. He was turning the ball over. He wasn't moving the ball like he should have been. And that kind of led to that whole, scenario. And then, we see towards the end of the season and then the first two games, he begins to, he penetrates the paint, and that gets the defense moving a little bit, and he's shifting it. And that's putting everybody off base with Boston, which, led to a lot of open shots for guys like Jimmy Butler and Zipser, for example. And it just, for whatever reason, it just finally clicked here towards the end of the season, where everything was shifting a little bit more and it wasn't as stagnant. That's what really made the difference, was him being able to get in the paint, shift the defense, back and forth, and find the open guy. Whereas we see tonight, for instance, and Grant, Michael Carter Williams and Isaiah Kanaan, neither one of those three can penetrate the paint. First off, and then if they do, neither one are smart enough to be able to find the open man or, create for somebody else. So we've just, you've seen the differences between, the two dynamics of the point guards here.
Let's talk about that for a second. That's a great transition. Speaking of point guards, and it's Cannon, by the way. He was a Sixer for a minute.
I think we went over this last
time. Yeah, I think we did. Every time he hits a three, I want to scream out Cannonball. That's the only thing he does well. But honestly, I was all ready to have like an Isaiah Cannon party after this game, because like they started, who did they start? They started Grant, I wanted to root for Grant. I wanted him to be good. He's terrible. Jaren Grant is terrible. Like
he has his moments. He's really good. I will say, he had a good stretch kind of in the middle of the season. And he's good when he gets going downhill, straight line drives, cause he's fast and pretty athletic and get into the rim. But yeah, you get him into the half court and he cannot do anything. He can't shoot very well, even though he did post All-Star break, but we haven't seen that, in the last couple games. But
and that's the thing too. I think he would probably be an effective point guard on another team with spacing. This team is not right. That. I mean, this team is a challenge for anyone, right? There is no spacing on this team.
Absolutely. And even with Grant too, again, and that, and this goes along with Michael Carter Williams, like neither one of them are good at all in terms of running an offense and then being able to, you know, create for others and penetrate and kick or penetrate and dish. Neither one have shown that the ability to do either of those two things this year.
Yeah, and I was going to transition that into talking about Michael Carter-Williams. As bad as Jerami Grant has been, Michael Carter-Williams is freaking awful. He's not going to be in the league much longer. And I feel bad for saying that because I'm a Sixers fan, right? I was really high on the kid that first year. I was like, yeah, he's putting up counting stats on a really, really bad team. But I think there's something there. Well, credit to Sam Hinkie because he saw it. He knew what he was going to be.
I'll tell you this, and it's been a running joke of Bulls Twitter, quote unquote, is that only the Bulls could lose a trade involving Tony Snell. And they've managed to do that by trading him for Michael Carter-Williams, who he might not. I do feel bad for him, but he should not. He probably won't be in the league in 2 years.
No, for sure.
Because, you know, first off, offensively, he's just a train wreck. You saw it tonight. He's turning the ball over. He can't shoot at all. It'd be one thing if he had a mid-range shot or could at least get to the basket consistently, but he can't do either of those two things. And
for sure. You know, and the strength of his game was like he's long and athletic, slightly athletic, and he can, you know, he can put those arms out and, you know, intercept passes. He can rebound well for a point guard. But, man, he seems like his defensive game has seriously regressed. It's like he's always guessing the wrong angle. He's just terrible. By the way, I wanted to bring this up. He got into it tonight. You know, and by the time this airs, it's going to be so past the point, but whatever. He got into it with Isaiah Cannon tonight, and it got me thinking, who would you take in a fight? Because I would definitely take, not Cannon, sorry, Isaiah Thomas. He got into it with Isaiah Thomas. They were like chest to chest. You know, I was just I would definitely take Isaiah Thomas. I'm just saying. I think he would wreck him. Yeah.
In a heartbeat. And you know what the funny thing is? I tweeted this out earlier in the game. So the Bulls were down 67-65 at the 304 mark in the third quarter. And then they subbed in Michael Carter-Williams instead of Grant to take out Cannon. The Celtics went on a 12-0 run, and that was led by Thomas, of course, who had, I think it was like 8 or 10 in a row there for a point.
Yeah, he was going off. It was really amazing to behold, honestly.
It really was, and it's amazing to watch him play, to be honest. I'm such a huge fan of his.
Yeah, me as well.
You know, I remember when the Kings drafted him, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. And yeah, I've just been such a huge fan of watching him to get to this point. But anyway, as I was saying, you know, that MCW rotation there at the end of the third quarter completely shifted the game. I mean, it was a 2-point game and momentum going with the Bulls. And then they put in Michael Carter-Williams and it just, Isaiah Thomas just worked him for the last three minutes.
Seriously, and like when they put Cannon in, I was like, oh my God. When they first subbed him in, I was like, I know him, obviously. He was on the Sixers, right? I know what he brings, and it seems like that kid actually has gotten better on the defensive end. He was doing a really good, an admirable job on Isaiah Thomas. And I was like, oh, Isaiah versus Isaiah, this is going to be fun. It's going to be all threes and like two little guys, you know, defending each other. And they made a huge run. They came back from, what, 20 down, I think? With Cannon at the helm. And I was like, oh my God, this might be the answer. This could be the answer, like, after Rondo is out. And now they might have another point guard that they can actually use. And, yeah, I think Hoiberg is just that bad of a coach. Seriously, that he just does not know how to make substitutions. And, like, he blew this. I blame him for blowing this game.
Yeah, that was a very poor decision on his part. And I said this earlier in the year, you know, Cannon, apologies.
Yeah.
he obviously, you know, he had a rough year with the Bulls, but when he was playing some consistent minutes, I will give him credit. You know, he had a bad reputation as a poor defender, and he's still not very good. But I gave him credit, though, because you could tell he was really trying on that end, and he was trying to, you know, be in the right position and get over pick and rolls, where we can't say that for some people.
Yeah.
And so I give him credit for that, and you could see that tonight. You know, he does try. But he is, you know, he's short and stocky, and that sometimes hurts his ability to get around pick and rolls and around defenders, you know. And that's, you know, the only thing that kind of keeps him at bay is his quickness, and he's a little shifty. But that does help him. But, you know, it is the Bulls' best option at this point, unfortunately. And, you know, it's kind of set up that we're at the point that we're going to be starting Isaiah Cannon in a playoff game because we have no other options.
And the weird thing is, it's like, you do have other options. You have a bench full of point guards and none of them can play. Is this, this is a train wreck of a, all right, anyway, let's, I'm not gonna go off on the Bulls. But I was saying, like, earlier that, you know, when this series first started, I was really looking forward to Boston just sweeping, getting the Bulls out of the playoffs, because they don't deserve this. Honestly, the year they have had, I mean, whatever, deserve, not deserve, I'm just saying, like, the fans, I feel like, deserve better than this team, because I think the front office has done exactly what they wanted, which is to get in the playoffs, and that keeps them safe in their jobs. And I think the fan base, correct me if I'm wrong, is really eager to have Gar Forman and John Paxson out of there, because they're doing, that's all they're doing, is they're just getting you into the playoffs every year. Like, barely. They're just hodgepodging a team together to keep interest and keep players in the, or, you know, people in the seats, and just make money. They get to the first round and they're good. Like, there's nowhere to grow from here. They're not putting a good team around Jimmy Butler. They're not, nope. They're not growing any of their players. Like, they've made this horrible trade for Cameron Payne. And he, isn't it Cameron Payne? Didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And he's sitting on the bench. There's another point guard that's not starting. And they have Denzel Valentine too. And he's not, like, what are you doing? Like, what are you guys doing? Seriously.
You know, it's been well documented times throughout this year and even last year by myself, my other fellow writer, Ricky O'Donnell. The management, there's a long, very long track record of poor decisions made by them. And then even ESPN came out and ranked them as the worst front office in the league. And I mean, they honestly have no business being, you know, still in charge right now, but there's a lot of other little intricacies within the front office that's keeping them there, relationships that are going on, that are keeping them where they're at, unfortunately. And it doesn't look like that's going to change in the near future. And with the Bulls coming back at the end of the season and making this run in the playoffs, you know, it just gives those two, Gar Forman and John Paxson, you know, more power to stay for the future. And it, you know, gives them more say in that, you know, what they're doing is working. And that, you know, the Rondo signing was good, and that they'll probably bring him back next year because he helped the Bulls make this run. And, Wolf. You know, it's just, you know, nobody, you won't find one person that follows the Bulls and has anything nice to say about those two. And yet things have worked out to where they're just going to stay in charge, you know, with the playoff berth and the revival of Rondo here at the end of the season. And it's just, it's unfortunate to see, because it's not going to help Jimmy Butler. It's just going to stagnate his growth, because from it, you know, it's pretty apparent that they don't know how to structure a team around him and, you know, maximize his strengths.
I don't think they care to, honestly. I think what they're doing, in what they're doing, they're actually doing a good job at what they're doing, which is the worst thing to be doing, right? But they're doing a really good job at, like, keeping it together just to get in the playoffs and get bounced in the first round. In that, they're succeeding admirably, brilliantly. But it's a train wreck of an organization, so you really have to blame the front of the ownership. But listen, we're getting seriously off topic. I didn't even mean to go down this road. It's just like every time you talk about the Bulls, you have to bring this up. There's no way you can avoid it, you know?
Yeah, there's just, I mean, you can go down a rabbit hole when you talk about this team and organization. I mean, there's so many things you can discuss.
Seriously, this is like the third time I've talked about the Bulls with someone, and you're two of them, this year. I haven't talked about another team this much besides the Sixers, because I just do that. But anyway, listen, let's talk about, so the series is tied up 2-2 now. Do you think the Bulls, I mean, going in, like, when I got a hold of you, I was like, this is going to be a crazy upset. The Bulls are going to sweep the Celtics. It's nuts. And we need to talk really, really briefly about Isaiah Cannon lost his sister in a tragic car accident. And I can't watch this game without my heart going out for that guy, man. Mm-hmm. I feel horribly, horribly bad for him. I can't even imagine how that affects the locker room and how that affects him personally. That he's even playing is a huge credit to him and his character. And, you know, just personally, I wish him all the best. I wish his family nothing but, like, I hope, you know, they work through this. So that's a huge distraction. And maybe that's part of what the first two games were. Maybe that's why they laid an egg or whatever they did. But do you think that the Bulls actually, now that it's tied 2-2, do you think the Bulls actually have a chance at winning this series without Rondo?
I think you meant, okay, just to kind of go back, I think you accidentally said Isaiah Cannon.
Oh, sorry, talking, I keep saying Cannon.
You meant Isaiah Thomas. So I just wanted to clarify for you.
thank you. I've got Cannon on my mind now, man.
I know.
Isaiah Thomas, sorry. Thank you for correcting me.
What a time.
Yeah. Only the Bulls could make me do that. Only the Bulls.
Right. No, honestly, I was talking to somebody earlier tonight, you know, as the game started, and I think Boston's going four in a row. Without Rondo being able to be the floor general on offense, and like we talked about earlier, being able to shift the defense and finding the open man in the open spaces, and then on defense being, you know, that coach on the floor. If you look back at game one and game two, there are plenty of highlights out there showing how tight the Bulls rotations were defensively, and Rondo communicating on that end and making sure guys were rotating and switching. And without him on the floor, it's weird to think, because his defense has been atrocious for like the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. But it's flipped a switch when you know game one and game two, which is really what helped the Bulls, you know, win those first two games. And without him on the floor and his communication, you can see in the last two games, it's made a significant difference, which again is weird to think, but it's the case. And I don't see how the Bulls can overcome that, especially in guarding Isaiah Thomas. Fred's made no sort of adjustments in that, and the Boston's exploited that at will the last two games, you know, with the Bulls not having anybody to defend Thomas. And I think it's just going to be the same thing the next two games. And I just don't see the Bulls being able to overcome it, especially, you know, with Dwayne Wade playing as poorly as he has been, Nikola Mirotic not playing as well as he should be, and just a lot of the supporting players not, you know, being as consistent as we'd like them to be in the playoffs. You know, everybody's had their own game. Like Paul Zipser had a good game in game two. Bobby Portis had a good game in game one. But, you know, games three and four, you're still looking for those guys again, and they're not there. So I just think there's a whole lot of inconsistencies being shown now, especially with Rondo out. And no, I think it's done in six.
I tend to agree with you. I also think it's going to be done in six. Honestly, they have to go back into Boston. Boston has all the momentum now. And you're absolutely right with guarding Isaiah Thomas. They put Lopez in the pick and roll like over and over again, and they had to pull him out of the game. Like the only defensive guy that you have, the only guy that was shutting down Horford and getting you rebounds, they lost so many 50-50 balls and rebounds tonight to Boston, who's a terrible rebounding team. Mm-hmm. But they can't keep, you know, Lopez out there trying with the surrounding cast, nobody able to guard Isaiah Thomas because they don't have Rondo there. It was a train wreck. Thomas just flipped the switch and it was over, man. They took back that lead, you know, like that. So I'm totally with you. I still can't believe when this is coming out of my mouth. I think without Rondo, they're in deep trouble.
They are. And that's like that's the common sentiment now. It's like, 2 months ago, we were like, oh, Rondo's going to be in China next year. And then now it's like, Rondo might be back with the Bulls again next year because he just decided to flip a switch the last 3 weeks. So it's just kind of weird how that whole perception has changed so rapidly.
And by the way, that does not make me like Rondo any better, knowing that he could do this the entire time. He just chooses not to. He's like, it's the regular season. Doesn't really matter.
It's like, oh, we're playing Boston now, so I guess I'll flip the switch and, it's like, we could have used this all year. But
where were you earlier? You know, the other thing is, too, like, I did this stupid preseason prediction podcast by myself, and I just came up with 12 random things. One of my random things was seeing this Bulls roster put together. I predicted that Jimmy, I think I might have talked to you about this last time, too. I predicted that Jimmy Butler and Rondo would fight on the court, and it almost came to it. I was like, I was just goofing around when I said this, but I was like, oh, my God, I might be right. And now it's just like totally opposite, and now he's injured. It's just the Bulls deserve it, honestly. I think it's just like the cosmos getting even.
Yeah, I mean, this Bulls season has been such a up and down and around season. It's I mean, when those three got together, Wade, Butler, and Rondo, you knew there was going to be a lot of egos in a room. And we saw that break in December with, you know, the Instagram post and Wade and Butler calling everybody out. But apparently from what I've read, you know, those three had to come to Jesus meeting, you know, and that's what kind of brought them back together, which kind of helped push this run that we're seeing at the end of the season. But I'll give credit to Rondo, and I wrote about it last week. You know, I've dogged him all year, but I got to give him credit. You know, he's one of the main reasons, along with Butler, that the Bulls are where they're at right now. And you can't really say anything else. I mean, that's what it is. And now it's giving more power to Foreman and Paxton to pick up his, you know, $13 million option this summer and bring him back next year for another run. It's unfortunate because everybody wanted him gone, and it seems like
rightfully so.
You know, there's no way he's coming back, you know, and now it's like, ah, oh, shit, or shoot.
It's all
you know, it looks like we're going to have Rondo back for another year. You know, it's weird how 3 weeks can change so much.
Yeah, I feel really bad for you guys. You know what? You do got to get one other thing you have to give Rondo credit for, though, is his short sleeve suit. That was bizarre. Did you see that?
Yeah, he's got quite the fashion statement there on the sidelines.
Also, did you see that he tried to trip Jay Crowder on the sideline? And did you see what he said about it afterwards? This is the most BS excuse I've ever heard. You got to give him points for creativity, but at the same time, like, really, dude?
Yeah, you just got to shake your head. I saw the replay and then his excuse. I'm just like, whatever.
By the way, what do you even say about it? I should clarify for anybody that doesn't know what he said. He was talking about his ACL injury. He's like, sometimes you just need to stretch out the legs. I had one before, and I just happened to be stretching when he was running by, and some garbage like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's Rondo. You've seen him have those little episodes throughout his career, like saying something like you talked about earlier, making some action. Like, you know, it's just Rondo. I mean, It is what it is. You're not going to get anything different from him.
I think the best thing that could happen for the Bulls is that he would retire from professional basketball and take up professional Connect Four. You guys would be like...
Let's hope somebody starts a professional league and he decides to go into that.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if there already is one. I should look into it.
Yeah, I mean, whatever keeps him out of a Bulls uniform.
Sadly to say.
I mean, even as he's, like, propelling the Bulls in the postseason, he's going to be owed $13 million next year if the Bulls bring him back. And it's not good. It's not a good situation.
I know. I feel for you, man. Listen, I'm a Sixers fan. I was trapped in, like, limbo for years and years and years. I know exactly what you're going through. But listen, let's build the – we just mentioned why they couldn't win. And I don't want to spend a whole lot more time on the Bulls because, well, they're the Bulls.
Yeah, fair enough.
But let's build the case for why they could win. Jimmy Butler is still really just that good. He's probably still the best player on either team. Although – Isaiah Thomas tonight went off, and he was showing everybody how good he really is. Also, Lopez was killing Horford, and, you know, D-Wade, I want to say that playoff D-Wade is still a real thing, but I think D-Wade's career might be over at this point.
Yeah, he's definitely opting into his option this summer because no one's going to be offering him that much money or more this summer after this postseason and even season in general. He's as much as I'd hate to say it, I think he's washed at this point.
I would tend to agree with that. I think there's a banana boat parked on his dock waiting for him, like, to ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, one thing we saw in the second half with Fred, I'm going to be writing about some adjustments Fred hasn't been making this week here, probably either tomorrow or Tuesday. But one thing we saw in the second half that worked was using Jimmy Butler as the point guard de facto. It's been something everybody's been clamoring for all year, is putting Jimmy at point guard like James Harden. Mm-hmm. You know, space the floor with quote-unquote shooters that the Bulls may or may not have, and then just let them go to work. Run the pick and roll and space the floor out. And it finally happened tonight, and we saw, you know, how effective that could be. You know, is Jimmy in a pick and roll, or is Dwayne Wade in a pick and roll with Isaiah Cannon, you know, 1-2 or 1-3 pick and roll. And, you know, that forced the Boston Celtics to switch and then put Thomas on either Wade or Butler, and that's when they took advantage. And then they spaced the floor with Cannon and Nico and, you know, either Wade or Butler, whoever was in the pick and roll. And it actually worked. I mean, that's what helped them go on that run. And I think what we'll see the next game, or next two games, I should say, is Cannon's going to start. And then I think we're going to see a lot more of Butler handling the ball. And I think that will change things a lot more than what we saw the last two games. So if they can really maximize that at Jimmy at point guard, and then hope that Wade and especially Mirotić get it going and find some sort of rhythm in these next two games, I think that's what's really going to need to happen for them to have a chance to win. They got to have those two guys get it going. You know, otherwise it's going to be a long two games here.
Yeah. You know, and actually that would be a great adjustment, because Cannon, what I know of him, man, he's really an off ball guard. He can knock down threes. He's not a point guard. He does not do well at spreading the ball around. He does not do well at getting the offense moving. And I think putting Butler in that position is the best thing for them to do. You're exactly right. I don't trust that Fred Hoiberg will figure this out.
Then I was gonna say too, you know, with that being said, there's also the other side of the ball too. You know, we saw the way they're covering the pick and roll with Thomas and Horford isn't working. They're coming out with a really hard hedge, and Lopez isn't able to recover in time, and the Bulls aren't rotating as well. So he's got to make some sort of adjustments in how they cover that, you know, in the next two games, or, you know, that's just going to eat him alive like it has these last two.
Yeah, for sure. So here's another question. So let's just presume that the Bulls get, you know, they get bounced in the next two games and they're out. Then they're done for the year. Do you think Hoiberg keeps his job?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah. Two reasons.
See how surprised I was when you said that? I was like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah, no. Everybody on who knows or cares about the Bulls would say can him. He should have been canned in midseason. Mm-hmm. But him, kind of, I guess you could say, as much as I begrudgingly say this, keeping the team somewhat together. I mean, they were 32 and 37 in March, and they managed to finish the season 500 and make this run in the playoffs. And Fred did coach those first two games. Fred did coach pretty well, so I'll give him that. And I think that those couple of factors there are gonna help him keep his job. And then the other fact is that, you know, he did sign a 5-year, you know, $25 million deal 2 years ago. And so they're still paying Tom Thibodeau. And then if they fire Hoiberg, they'll be paying him the rest of his contract. And, you know, Bulls ownership is known to be pretty conservative with their money. So, yeah, and that's another factor as to why I seriously doubt they fire him. So he'll be here at least, you know, one more year, two at the most, I think. And, you know, if they really want to have some more success, they got to really reevaluate how they structure the roster moving forward.
That's fair. And, you know, the thing is, like, when he was hired with a completely different team. And apparently he runs a completely different system than the one he was, like, forced into. Not system, but, like, with the players he has to try and figure it out on the fly, I suppose. So I guess maybe giving him a shot, bringing him back again, letting him get into his third year is not the worst thing, right? I mean, maybe he just needs a little time. Like, this happens with players. This happens with GMs, I guess, too. Like, you need a little bit of time to get into the job. Listen, I started a new job 2 years ago, and, like, it took me forever to figure out the job. You know?
Like, so yeah.
If they had fired me in the first year, it would have been a tragedy for me. I mean, they wouldn't have cared, but whatever. It's like, you know, it took me a while to get into the groove of things. So I understand that, and I think that maybe he could improve next year. And if the roster stays the same and it's stable, maybe they'll be able to figure some things out. I still think they have a really, really limited ceiling, though. And, like, what are you going to do with these guys? They're all in the peak or past the prime of their career, except for Jimmy Butler. And you need to put better players around him, or he's just going to leave.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, Fred's been dealt a pretty crappy hand in the first 2 years. You know, looking at last year and this year, they bring him in to run this space and pace system, you know, where they chuck a lot of threes like he did at Iowa State, and yet neither Paxton or Foreman have given him the personnel to run that system. Like, it's been the complete opposite for 2 years, and so it's really difficult for him to be able to put that system in. But then at the same time, you know, he hasn't really helped himself either in terms of, you know, the player-coach relationships. We've seen that go downhill these first 2 years, and just adapting, you know, his system to his players, we haven't seen him really be able to do that either. So it's kind of twofold. It, you know, he hasn't been given a roster that's capable of running what he wants to, and then he hasn't really done the best job of adapting to what he's been given. So, but I think if, you know, moving forward again, if they want to, you know, find a little bit more success next year and the year after, they've got to be able to build, you know, one, decide if they want to keep Jimmy Butler, and then two, if they do want to keep him, you know, really work on building around him with capable shooters and an actual point guard.
If I were the Bulls, I would try my best to get that number one pick away from Boston. That's just what I'm thinking. Maybe a number one pick and whatever else they'll give you, you know?
I mean, if they're gonna trade him, that's, you know, you don't trade him for anything less than that number one pick and at least two rotation players from Boston. You don't give anything else. I mean, he's a franchise player, so you don't give up anything of lesser value than that, and maybe even than some. I mean, it's gonna take a godfather offer to get him away from the Bulls.
Oh, for sure. Well, listen, I think we've talked about this depressing playoff series enough. Do you want to talk about any other series while we're on the phone, while we're on the line?
Yeah, we can.
Cool. What are your thoughts? Can I ask you what your thoughts are about Blake Griffin's injury and the Clippers?
It sucks. I feel bad for the guy. You know, he had his peak. He was so good. He was third in MVP voting. And then the last, 2 years, injuries and not very smart decisions by him off the court have really caught up to him. And
yeah,
it's just, you know, it's just really unfortunate to see such an athletic and talented player, struggle with injuries, especially in the playoffs. And, you know, to be honest, I think that last game on Friday night may have been the last time we see him in a Clippers uniform.
I would totally agree with that. I think, but then again, you know what? I can't trust Doc, the GM. I only halfway trust him as a coach, and he's much better at that. so I feel like he might try everything he can do to bring this whole core back again, man. I honestly, if anybody's going to make a stupid move like that, it would be Doc, right? Not that Doc's a dumb guy. A dumb guy. It's just that, like, this
he
is
might
a...
be.
He might be
stubborn enough to try it again, but
I think that's true. Yeah,
he's got to really work on making some roster adjustments, and he's got to make sure he can bring back Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Both of them are free agents this summer. They're gonna be demanding a lot of money.
Oh yeah.
So you got to be able to make sure you have money to bring him back, but then also that you can actually surround them with depth, because that's been their biggest issue the last, you know, 5 odd years has been they just haven't had the depth. They haven't had a small forward that can play both ways. And you know, he's really kind of like the Bull situation. He's got to be able to, if he brings him back, to structure a quality team around those big three.
Yeah, and Doc's method of signing guys is just, oh, that guy beat me last year, I'm going to sign him, which is not a good route to take.
his track record here with the Clippers in terms of his decision making just hasn't been the best. And you know, if they lose this series to Utah, which I'm watching as we speak, assuming in the next round against, you know, Golden State, you know, he's really got to take a step back and take a hard look and, you know, evaluate which direction he wants to go in. Does he blow it up and start over, or does he try and bring it back one more time? I mean, he's got some tough decisions to make.
For real. Well, let me say two things real quick. First, I'm really offended that I'm not getting your undivided attention. second, I'm jealous that you're watching the game and I'm not.
And it's just on in the background, trust me. It's just on in the background.
Fair enough. There was a third thing, and who do you think wins the series? Who do you think is gonna? Because I know that, like, I just talked to a couple guys on. Have you ever heard of the Fuzz NBA podcast? They're awesome. If you don't know them, check them out. Yeah, we were just talking last night about this series. I think that. So Gobert is going to be back in a couple of games, right? And I think
he's actually playing right now.
Oh, he is. He's playing.
Yeah, he came back.
So tell me who's winning right now.
LA is up 5 right now in the first. It doesn't look like Rudy's 100% based on what I've seen. He looks like he's still a little stiff on that knee. So
yeah, well, it's probably to be expected. I mean,
right.
Yeah. But I was going to say that I think that Utah makes it their way out of this series. Go ahead. Give me your thoughts.
I was going to say, yeah, I kind of hope Utah does. I've been on the Utah bandwagon here for like the last 2 to 3 years. so it's awesome to see him actually in the playoffs finally. But no, I think if Rudy can provide them any type of production, I think that makes a huge difference, especially with, you know, Blake Griffin being out. That just gives Utah a little bit more added depth up front. But it's been such a close series, all three games. I'd like to think that Utah, you know, Snyder makes a few good adjustments here in the last portion of the series, and then they get out of it in, you know, 6 or 7 games. At least I'd like to, because I think they'll give Golden State a better series than the Clippers would.
Oh, for sure. I absolutely agree with that. You know, I'd love to talk more about this series, but honestly, I've gotten to watch like a half an hour of the first game. So I'm really unschooled. I'm just going to make myself sound like an idiot. But I know that Hayward's been playing great. Well, he had 21 points the last time they played, right? In the first quarter, just went off, and then they shut him down in the fourth.
Yeah, he was sensational in that first quarter. And he's been playing really well this entire series. And, Snyder's shortened his rotation down to about 7 or 8 guys. You know, you look at Dante Exum hasn't been playing. Alec Burks hasn't been playing. Trey Lyles hasn't been playing.
So what you're saying is he's a good coach.
Yes. Yeah, he's only playing the guys he trusts in this situation. So, it's just going to be fun to watch these two teams battle out the last, 4 games or so, and who makes the right adjustments and when. And it'll be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and it is kind of sad that like this whole series, as good as the potential as it is for it to be, is the whole storyline has so far been injuries on both sides. Like Gobert went out, he's playing again tonight, but yeah, he's not 100%. But now Blake Griffin's out for the season, and we were, I think every one of us was really looking forward to this series, because it's sort of the big brother little brother series, right? LA has owned Utah for the most part. And everybody's thinking that, the Jazz are really up and coming. They have a lot of young talent and they're heading in the right direction. And I think most people were picking them to either get out of the first round or at least give the Clippers a good run for their money. And it's playing out that way so far. But it's just sad that, like, the game, the series is marred by these injuries. It's something you never want to see,
Yeah, it seems like that there's a case of that almost every year. There's a significant injury that, kind of changes the series. You look at Boston and Chicago, and then that's a great example. And then now you have L.A. and Utah. It is unfortunate that that's kind of been the storyline. But, now it's, okay, how do we make adjustments? How do we overcome those injuries? And, usually the team that does the best job of that advances, of course.
Of course. And we should also mention that like 2 years ago, Golden State won the championship because everybody got injured on their way. That's not the only reason they won. They were really good. But they also had the best luck ever, right? Everybody they were going to play had an injury. So it's part of the game. That's why depth on your bench is so important. And it's hard to find those guys too, man. I think, honestly, I am of the opinion that finding good bench depth is almost harder than finding your stars.
Yeah, you've got to find some really good rotation guys that can step up, when your star players come out and can keep the team, keep the game afloat. And there just really can't be a significant drop off. And you just got to make sure also it's just the right personnel that fits within your system and, can surround your star players if they mix and match rotations. So, there's a lot of strategy involved in building a team. And, we see some teams do a great job of it, like David Griffin in Cleveland, and Daryl Morey in Houston have done a great job of surrounding their best players with the right guys. And then we've also seen GMs do a really poor job of it, like Gar Foreman and John Paxson. So
it just keeps coming back full circle, doesn't it?
Exactly. It always comes back to those two.
Speaking of really exciting young and up-and-coming teams, you want to talk about the Bucks a little bit in Toronto?
Oh, for sure.
So Giannis, up until last night, has been amazing in this. And I was talking about this before the playoffs even started. I was really looking forward to seeing Giannis play in the playoffs just because he's performed so well this year. He came out of nowhere. He was one of the guys that had he took such a giant step forward that, no one saw this coming. Like, everyone thought he was going to be good. No one thought he was going to be this good. Like, it doesn't. Like, a leap like this from year to year doesn't often happen. And I was really looking forward to him playing in games that actually matter and see what he's going to do in that setting. First two games he came out, man, he was the best player on the court. Last night, Toronto made some adjustments. Or first three games, I guess I should say. And they won it going away. And I think they held him to something like 18 points. And DeMar DeRozan finally showed up, which was good for Toronto. But it seems like it's going to be a really fun series going forward. What are your thoughts about it, and who do you think is going to win?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Giannis is the best player in that series, hands down, and I'm not sure it's particularly close, far and away. I think it's going to be a tough series. I think it'll end up going 7. Milwaukee's defense, the length, and when they're locked in, as we saw, and that 30-point drudging. I mean, they, it's just amazing to watch, you know, them rotate and communicate, and you know, they've just been on point this, you know, this far in the postseason. And you know, with Giannis, the way he's playing, he's such a hard matchup. You know, he's 7 feet tall, but he's a point guard, and his length is unbelievable. And you know, he's just a nightmare to try and defend, and he creates so many issues. And I can tell you this, Cleveland does not want Milwaukee in the second round.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, like, that's really legit. That's a serious matchup nightmare for them. They've got so much length. It's it's going to be a problem.
It is.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, no, no. He presents a lot of bad matchups, and it's unfortunate that Jabari went down, because you think if they had him and with the level that he was playing at before his injury, you know, you have to wonder where they would, you know, how much better they would be at this point, you know, with Jabari, and, you know, how far they could even go if he, you know, was healthy at this point. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think Toronto, you know, gets it together. I think they have a little bit better depth than Milwaukee, and I think they end up taking it in seven.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was going to say, too, one I had to tweet out the other night that Thon Maker, and I didn't even notice all year, has been really good in this playoff series. That kid has got so much potential. He's going to be a defensive nightmare. He knows how to put his body in the right position, and he's super long, right? And I think he actually can extend his range out to three-point land. Not that he's given the room to do that right now, but I think in his drafting, in his scouting report, I think he was actually hitting some threes. Like, he's a very athletic, incredibly long, gifted defender who's going to be able to, like, add an offensive game to his game. That team has got so much potential moving forward, and it's incredible that, like, I hadn't even noticed until the playoffs, because honestly, all year they were just middling. They were hanging around. They weren't doing great. But all of a sudden, when you get to see them in the playoffs and you realize how much talent is really on that team, man, their future is bright.
It is. It is enormously bright. And you just, again, you have to hope Jabari can get back healthy enough, you know, to near where he was at this last year, because he does make him that much better, especially offensively. But yeah, you look with the potential, the room to grow with Giannis. He's only 22.
Yeah.
And then Thon Maker is only, what, 19?
Well, we don't really know.
We assume he's 19.
We assume he's 19.
But no, and then, you know, you have Chris Middleton, who's back, and Malcolm Brogdon, who, from what I understand, it will probably be the rookie of the year.
That kills me. It kills me. Oh, my God.
It's a sensitive subject with the Philly fans, I know. but, yeah, I mean, their talent is – I mean, it is through the roof right now. And if they can continue to draft, you know, guys with potential, especially with this loaded draft coming up, and continue to add some pieces in the offseason, I mean, they're going to be a force in the East for a long time.
Yeah, and as much as I want to hold Jason Kidd's drunk driving, crashing into telephone poles and beating his wife against him, he actually is a good coach. You got to give him credit.
Yeah, you know, he's made some adjustments. You know, he made the smart move of putting Giannis at point guard and, you know, putting in Brogdon as kind of an off guard with him. He's had his troubles in the past, and even the spilling of the Coke incident.
that was actually the best.
But you know, he's done a pretty good job of rebounding that team from a pretty poor season last year to back in the playoffs and contending, you know, against Toronto. So you got to give him some credit. You know, he's made adjustments, and he's, you know, improved that team.
And everyone deserves a second chance, even if you're a jackass.
Exactly. Yeah, Rondo is probably second chance too. See?
Well, listen, let's not get crazy here.
he'll get a second chance with the Bulls. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right. One more. You want to talk real quick about OKC and Houston? Did you watch that game today?
I did catch the end of it. I had a coach practice earlier in the afternoon, so I missed the probably 3/4 of it, but I did catch the fourth quarter.
What are your thoughts, real quick?
Oh man, it's unbelievable just to watch Harden and, you know, Russ go back and forth. But at the end of the day, you just kind of see the weapons that Harden is surrounded with and the depth that he has. And it's just, that's, I think, is kind of the defining edge right there is, you know, he's able to, when the defense collapses, to kick it to guys like Eric Gordon, Ariza, Ryan Anderson, and those guys be able to make shots, Lou Williams. you know, and that has been able to really, you know, that's beneficial for him in the playoffs. Whereas you look at Russ and, you know, his style of play is, you know, quite different than Harden's, where it's, you know, me against the world and I'm going to, you know, go to the, you know, balls against the wall every possession. And, mm-hmm. You know, and his supporting cast, I guess, hasn't really stepped up nearly as much. I know Taj Gibson had a good game the last game, but you know, it's kind of a tricky situation with both of them. You know, where Harden, he has the ability to make guys around him better and and really maximize their strengths. Whereas Russ, he uses so many possessions and his usage rate is so high.
Yeah.
You know, the ball is constantly in his hands and he doesn't really, I guess. It's hard to say. You know, I just don't think he's as nearly as good at creating for others, even though he has a triple doubles. I understand, but I don't think he maximizes his teammates' strengths as well as Harden does, and I think that's the difference.
I would totally agree with that. And like begrudgingly, I'm going to admit that yes, Harden. While I don't think in a vacuum each one of the guys on his team are better than each one of the guys on Westbrook's team, they are better shooters. So I think in that respect, Harden does have a better supporting cast.
Yeah, and I think Harden uses them better.
Exactly.
Like I said, he maximizes their strengths far better than I think Russ does. And I think D'Antoni's a better coach than Donovan because I think D'Antoni puts those guys in better positions to succeed where Donovan, in my opinion, hasn't done that in 2 years.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Let me ask you real quick, who's your MVP if you're voting for one?
Oh, gone with James Harden the whole year.
There you go. Me too.
Yeah. I 55 wins in the Western Conference and numbers he puts up and the way he makes guys around him better and maximizes their strengths, as I just said, I got to give it to him.
Although I will say this against James Harden is that I was watching the game tonight and he still does the ball watching thing. As great as he is on offense, as good as he is in getting his guys in right positions and getting to the rim and shooting the 3-point shot, and all of that, he still ball watches. Like, he'll just stand there and watch somebody drive for, you know. It bothers me a little bit, the defensive thing. Like, yeah. I can see why Zach Lowe picked Kawhi Leonard for his MVP, because that guy does everything on both ends all the time. He's not
Absolutely.
The MVP.
Oh,
right?
Kawhi's game. Did you watch Kawhi's game last night?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, he is unbelievable. He's sensational.
He's so good. Should we talk?
And Mike Conley.
Mike Conley finally figured out that, like, he's sort of unguardable, right?
Right. And I can't remember who said, I think it was Matt Moore of CBS tweeted this out the other day. He goes, finally, Fitzdale is the guy that unleashes Mike Conley, and, like, his dominance. And you saw it last night, and it was just amazing to watch, you know.
It was amazing. All it took was take that for data and, like, these guys are exactly. on. God, I wanted to say that on the podcast for a whole week.
The one upsetting part about that series is the fact that Manu Ginobili is 0-15 through 4 games. Well, that's a little hard to digest.
Yeah, I think this is his last year, right? I don't think he's coming back next year.
Yeah. I'd have to think this is it for him.
Yeah, which is sad because you don't want him to go out like that. But
no.
Anyway, we should probably wrap this up. but thanks, Tyler. It was awesome having you on. I really enjoyed our talk. And tell everybody once again where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Twitter quite frequently. You can find me at Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, _ Pleiss, P-L-E-I-S-S. And then I write again for Bloggable at SB Nation, the Chicago Bulls site. Our website is bloggable.com, and that's where you can find me.
Awesome, man. I'll definitely have you on again this offseason because I think we're going to have to talk about some Bulls front office moves. I know they're going to do something crazy like sign Rondo again.
there'll be plenty more to talk about in the offseason.
For sure. Hey, man, thanks so much. Good luck to the Bulls or whatever. That's the most lukewarm thing I could ever say.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, there you go, everybody. Tyler Pleiss. Thank you again, Tyler, for coming on. He's a great follow on Twitter, and he's a very, very knowledgeable guy. You should read his writing, and check him out. Anyways, that's going to do it for me this week. Thanks for listening, y'all, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.